Constitution guarantees the right of same-sex couples to marry anywhere in the United States. That's the Supreme Court decision announced this morning in a highly anticipated and long-sought victory for gay rights activists. The decision was 5-4, with Justice Anthony Kennedy writing the majority opinion. Each of the four dissenters wrote their own dissents. Kennedy wrote in the majority opinion, "It would misunderstand these men and women to say they disrespect the idea of marriage. Their hope is not to be condemned to live in loneliness, excluded from one of civilization's oldest institutions. They ask for equal dignity in the eyes of the law. The Constitution grants them that right." And Roberts wrote in the dissent, "Celebrate the achievement of a desired goal. Celebrate the opportunity for a new expression of commitment to a partner. Celebrate the availability of new benefits, but do not celebrate the Constitution. It had nothing to do with it." Here is what President Obama had to say.
"This ruling is a victory for Jim Obergefell and the other plaintiffs in the case. It's a victory for gay and lesbian couples who have fought so long for their basic civil rights. It's a victory for their children, whose families will now be recognized as equal to any other. It's a victory for the allies and friends and supporters who spent years, even decades, working and praying for change to come. And this ruling is a victory for America. This decision affirms what millions of Americans already believe in their hearts. When all Americans are treated as equal, we are all more free."
Here with us now to talk about that ruling is Howard Schwaber, political science professor at UW-Madison, an expert in constitutional law and legal theory. Howard, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, nice to be here.
Well, can you put today's ruling into the context of history for us? Where do you place it in the annals of the Supreme Court?
Well, there's no question this counts as a sweeping ruling. In fact, Kennedy's opinion was more sweeping and more a total victory for same-sex marriage, if you view things that way, than I think most of us expected. There were a couple of different theories he might have used in writing an opinion that found that the Constitution guarantees same-sex couples' right to marry. He used all of them. He wrote four distinct arguments that he presented as separate grounds for his opinion. He appealed to equal protection. He appealed to a fundamental right under the Due Process Clause. He appealed to his favored belief in the equality of dignity. And as the quotations you just shared with us indicate, he used a good deal of rather flowery and poetic language in doing so.
So is this the ultimate goal, the brass ring for advocates of same-sex marriage?
Well, no. There's no question this would be regarded as a landmark case of the first order. There's no doubt in anybody's mind. There's also no question that it was a ringing victory and that Justice Kennedy went out of his way to write an opinion that left no room for doubt. On the other hand, there are two really big, technical but important questions that he refrained from answering. One is, as I mentioned, he presented four distinct arguments. He never told us whether each one of those arguments is sufficient in itself or whether they're only sufficient together. So if there's a future case in which some of those arguments apply and others don't, courts may revisit the question. The other thing that he's never told us, and this has been something the Supreme Court has not told us now in four or five cases stretching more than a decade, is it the case that classifications based on sexual orientation trigger strict scrutiny in the way that classifications based on race or on gender or religion trigger different levels of heightened scrutiny? And they've never answered that question, and they still haven't answered that question. Kennedy wrote an opinion that was very specifically about marriage and the unique value of marriage, and that's great, but it tells us nothing whatsoever about what the appropriate constitutional standard is for other laws that affect homosexuals, including homosexual couples, including homosexual married couples, in other situations. And so, for all of the sound and fury and poetry of Kennedy's opinion, the fact is he left a number of very important questions still open.
So given that he left a couple of unanswered questions on the table, are you anticipating that this is not the closing of a chapter, that we could see further legal challenges?
Oh, I think this is the opening of a chapter. I think there will be all kinds of questions. For one thing, of course, as Justice Alito in particular alluded to in his opinion, and as many GOP candidates have alluded to, there are going to be these questions about these freedom of religion laws and who can be forced under a state anti-discrimination law to do business with a same-sex couple against their religious beliefs and so on. There's a whole slew of possible issues there. There will be issues about the specifics of things that go with marriage, recognition of other marriages, adoption rules, and child custody issues, and divorce questions, and property settlement. There's a whole range of issues that will yet to be have yet to be determined, and we still don't really know what is the official word on the appropriate constitutional standard for addressing any of those questions. So this is more the beginning of a discussion than the end of a discussion. That being said, clearly the discussion is beginning with a very, very strong note.
And you mentioned the tone of Kennedy's majority opinion. Other people have said that it was poetic, and you said thunderous. Was there something unusual about the way that he expressed himself in that?
No, Kennedy often expresses himself this way, actually, particularly in cases involving the rights and equal treatment of homosexuals. It's worth pointing out, Kennedy has written all of the major Supreme Court cases on this issue. And in fact, he wrote two earlier cases, one called Lawrence, one called Windsor, both of which were issued on June 26th. So June 26th is the anniversary of no fewer than three major Supreme Court opinions, all written by Justice Kennedy, all upholding same-sex couples or homosexual individuals' right to equal treatment under one theory or another. And all of the opinions are written poetically, in some places beautiful, and legally confusing and kind of flimsy.
We're talking right now to Howard Schwaber, UW-Madison legal expert, talking about the same-sex marriage ruling that came down today from the Supreme Court, declaring it a constitutional right. And I wonder how much of this ruling, Howard, do you think was influenced by the dramatic transformation in public opinion about gay people over the years?
That's always a question when the court takes a step like this. Certainly, this court was reluctant to take up this question, and back in the summer, Justice Ginsburg gave a speech at the University of Minnesota Law School, and she made an interesting comment. She said, you know, maybe the Supreme Court won't take up this question unless the Sixth Circuit rules in a certain way. And what she was getting at was, up to that point, all the federal courts that had considered the question of same-sex marriage, in the last 2 years at least, had concluded that the Constitution does guarantee such a right. Then came the Sixth Circuit and said, no, there isn't such a right. And at that point, there was what's called a split in the circuits. Different federal courts had reached different conclusions. And that's really, I think, what pushed the court to finally take up this case. They were not eager to do so. They have had opportunities to issue this ruling last year and the year before. They really had to be pushed into it. And I think that speaks to the fact that Kennedy, for example, and the other liberal justices in particular, want to see themselves on the right side of history. And if you look at opinion polls and political attitudes, the direction in which history in America is flowing seems to be quite clear.
Now, what did you think about the dissenting opinions? There were four dissenters and four separate opinions written. First of all, is that unusual?
It is a bit unusual, particularly since they all joined in each other's. So it's not the case that, for example, one person said, well, I dissent on this ground, and someone else said, well, I completely disagree with you, but I dissent on a different ground. They all sort of agreed to the basic arguments. The tones are quite striking. Robert's dissent is very careful and very thoughtful. And very serious. And you shared with us the quotation at the end there, which is really quite beautifully written. Celebrate this opinion, celebrate all the good things that have happened, but don't celebrate this as about the Constitution. And his argument there, which all of the dissenters share, is that this court is not really applying the Constitution, they're inventing principles. What's interesting are the way that argument appeared in the other dissenting opinions. Justice Scalia's opinion is frankly a little bit unhinged. I think we're all a little concerned about Justice Scalia's emotional and mental well-being right now, because the opinion that he wrote was really quite over the top. But all of them took pains to go all the way back to cases from the beginning of the 20th century, particularly a case called Lochner versus New York, which students of constitutional law will know. But to go all the way back to the beginning of the century and say, you know, this court is putting into question its legitimacy as an institution. This is the kind of overreaching that we claim to have given up back in the 1930s. It's really a broadside attack, not only on this opinion, but much, much more generally on the legitimacy of what the court is doing at all. And it really sets this up as a profound political question, by no coincidence coming into a presidential election, about what is the role of the court. And I think we will hear a lot, more perhaps than we had necessarily expected, from both Republican candidates and whoever is the Democratic nominee, on the question of what kind of justices would you appoint and what do you see as the role of the court. And that could actually become a very salient question in this next election cycle.
As a procedural question, does this mean that states that don't have gay marriage laws on the books will need to scramble to do so or to repeal laws, or does the Supreme Court sort of blanket the land now and that's all that needs to be done?
No, in one sense, the Supreme Court does blanket the land, as you put it. But no, the states will have to produce procedures and forms and rules and undo existing rules. And states that want to do so will be able to stall. We're already hearing this out of Texas. The Texas Attorney General has said, well, instructed the clerks, nobody do anything until we figure out the precise rules here to protect religious liberty. Whatever you think of that argument on its merits, certainly it is the case that the action shifts immediately to the state level. Nebraska, for example, has already started issuing marriage licenses. Other states will be able, if they want to delay implementation, and that will tell you sort of how the local politics is playing out.
Any sense about how the political field, the 2016 presidential race, is going to be handling this sort of ruling?
Well, I think that within on the Republican side, you can already see a really major split between the candidates who want to be seen as statesmen and mainstream. So I'm thinking particularly Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Lindsey Graham, who are being very careful to say, well, I disagree with this ruling, but the court has ruled, let's move forward, let's not make this a big issue. And another set of candidates who want to be culture warriors, as the phrase. Huckabee falls in this category, so does Cruz, who are vowing to fight to the last man, you know, against the scourge of same-sex marriage. Where you fall on this very politicized cultural issue says a great deal about which kind of Republican you are coming into this election cycle. And in this set of primaries, that's the big divide. And Scott Walker, interestingly, is kind of halfway in between. He's appealed to the Tea Party. He's played very, very conservative notes, particularly over the last year. He's made a very strong statement about this court decision. He said we need a constitutional amendment. He's also tried to position himself as a pragmatist, a policy guy, and a statesman in the mold of Bush. I think it's going to become a challenge for Walker to choose which side of this divide he wants to be on and for which set of constituents he's running. On the Democratic side, of course, I think it's much easier. Any serious Democratic candidate will simply cheer this outcome and announce that they support it. And Hillary Clinton has done so, Bernie Sanders has done so, and Martin Malloy has already done so.
Howard, thanks a lot for joining us and talking about it today.
My great pleasure.
That was Howard Schwaber, political science professor at UW-Madison, an expert in constitutional law and legal theory. We talked to him about the Supreme Court's decision today that marriage between any two people is a constitutional right in the United States.